Thank you so much for joining me today. At this point, it's fair to say that we're all pretty familiar with burnout, right? With the last couple of years and whatnot. But for physicians, burnout is unique in that it's pervasive and it's gotten worse, I'm sure, with the pandemic. What is burnout? What does it look like?
I think it just boils down to being in a state of overwhelm, of being exhausted on all fronts, physically, mentally, emotionally, and just sort of characterized by feelings of despondency, anhedonia, loss of motivation, but mostly just feeling overwhelmed.
So why, in your opinion, are physicians more susceptible to burnout than the average person?
I think there are a lot of reasons. We spend a lot of time in sort of delayed gratification. We spend many years getting ready for this, and there's a lot of pressure with every step along the way to perform and to do well with little room for failure. And when we are in our jobs, I think we spend more time at it than in other fields. It's more of a struggle to integrate our personal and our professional lives and engage in this highly technical, demanding work that has lots of complex, high stakes decision making, with a lot of uncertainty, and that I think creates some underlying stress. We have to, particular challenges around documentation and what sometimes are felt as unfair compensation strategies. There are certain things that are outside of our control, like government regulations and how things get reimbursed, and also we're taught through our training that the patient always comes first and to never show signs of weakness. And I think just by nature of the profession, we have a lot of compassion in what drives us, and that desire to sort of take care of everyone can sometimes leave us not taking care of ourselves. And I would say just personally, some of I think the issues too is as a subspecialist, we're dependent on referrals from other people, and you sort of feel that pressure to always do a good job, say yes, and get the patient in quickly and do a perfect job taking care of that patient, because you feel like if you don't do that at that high level every time, then that person's not going to send you patients any longer, and that referral source will dry up. And then just speaking to my specialty in particular, I'm a surgeon, and sometimes we have days where truly I will operate from 7 in the morning until 7 p.m. and the only real breaks are in between those maybe three surgeries that happen during that day. And during those breaks, all you do are try to rapidly respond to emails and text messages that have come up while you're in surgery, and try to get as many notes and patient emails and things responded to quickly during that time. And you literally go that entire day. And while you're in the OR, sometimes, even though I don't take care of really life-threatening conditions, the pressure around the technical details, some of this stuff is really high stakes in terms of the complexity. You really have to have a great deal of concentration. If you make a mistake, you can really hurt somebody. So anyway, I think all of that put together are some of the unique things that I think put pressure on us as physicians that make us more susceptible to burnout.
Definitely. That sounds exhausting from someone who, writes and talks to people all day. That sounds really stressful, I can imagine. So, what are some things, some of the warning signs that people can watch out for in themselves and also among their peers, that they might be approaching burnout?
Well, I think if you're waking up in the morning and dreading going to work, if you're finding that you're not having those moments of flow where you sort of lose track of time, or moments of joy in your work, if those are happening rarely or not at all, if you're easily triggered with a really low threshold to get frustrated and upset, problem sleeping, feeling disconnected from other people that you're working with, or from feeling disconnected from your family, not having days where you can let go of work a little bit, or you're finding that you're not making time for things that usually bring you happiness, or just not finding joy in things that usually would cause happiness or joy. So those are some of the warning signs that you're going in the wrong direction.
So as a practitioner and just, you know, personally for you, what's helped you? You know, what tools have you found that actually are helpful? You know, what can people start focusing on if they want to prioritize their well-being?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd say, you know, everybody's different. You got to find your own path.
Sure.
And I would also say that you got to give yourself a lot of room to fail and, you know, realize that it's a lot of taking two steps forward and one step back. And, you know, I mean, this week is a great example. I mean, this morning, I had a kind of a near breakdown just with everything that's going on. I mean, just for example, this month I have two review papers that I need to write, four talks that I need to give, including one that today that I haven't even finished preparing for. I'm having surgery. I'm getting married. I have
a
work trip to New York. And, you know, all of the other normal things that I do in terms of surgeries and patients to be seen. And, you know, and I had a readmission to the hospital last night. And sometimes you just feel like you're going to crack. And this week has been one of those weeks. And so, you know, it's definitely not you don't ever really get there. It's always a work in progress. So I'd say that as my initial thought. Yeah. But I think probably one of the things that has been most effective for me is this idea of creating tiny habits or micro steps. So the idea is that the habits that you change are really small, so small that they're too small to fail. And what you do is make one little change, you know, in your habits that then you can build on. So you start to feel the success of this little thing that you've done differently. And then, you know, that it creates a positive reinforcement. And then you start to build on that. And then you can start to really get into the habits that make a difference for you. So, you know, I'll just give some, you know, examples of areas in my life that, you know, I've made changes over the last 4 or 5 years that have made a difference, starting with sleep. So I used to really deprioritize sleep,
right.
You know, that sort of, you know, you can sleep with your sleep when you're dead, mentality,
right.
And, you know, realize right. that's, actually counterproductive, that you really do need sleep in order to be effective, in your day life. So doing things like creating a dark room, bringing down the temperature, avoiding blue light, reading something, right before bed. We don't drink caffeine in the afternoon. So each one of those things were like little habits that I put together that have now created a more comprehensive habit around having better sleep. Exercise has always been that thing that's really important to me. It keeps me grounded. Maybe have too much of a commitment to exercise at points, but that's something that's really important. I think some type of journaling or reflection. So the way that I found a way to do it, because it's always a matter of finding time to do these things. But I, when I drive to work in the morning, I just use my voice recorder on my phone and I just journal by voice. And so I just think about, you know, what things happened in the last 24 hours that, you know, I want to reflect on and think through, think about what's upcoming for the day. Sort of set my intentions for the day.
I love that idea. I was going to say you're driving and journaling. I'm not sure where this is going to go. But
yeah, no, I've never gone back really and listened to it, but I actually record it. And I got the idea from, I'm forgetting her name right now, but the author of Eat, Pray, Love, her partner died. And she talked about actually talking to her in a voicemail, and something about the physical act of like calling someone and talking made it feel more real and a connection. So I just record it in the morning. And at the end, I came up with a mantra for myself, which is, I want to live in the moment rather than escape it, to build a practice of curiosity and calm, of emotional responsivity rather than reactivity, so that I can care for Matthew and care for those around me and be the best version of myself that I can be. And I repeat the serenity prayer with a little addition. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom, grace, strength, and discernment to know the difference. And I'm not a religious person, but for me, prayer is sort of just putting out to the universe the things that are really kind of on my mind and putting it out there that I, you know, sort of want these things to happen. And so, you know, I ask for wisdom in the responsibility of taking care of patients, that I would do a good job and make somebody's life better through the work that I'm doing, be it in the operating room or taking care of patients in the outpatient setting, but that I would keep my patients safe and use good judgment and be a good teacher and be efficient in my use of time and really just be a light in this world today. And that's sort of how I just set my intention. And mm-hmm. I don't know, it seems to help.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that can be
sure
personal.
Yeah, it is very personal. Just other things I do, avoiding decision fatigue. So I keep my dress clothing pretty simple, and I lay them out beforehand and kind of get my stuff all ready for the next day, the night before, so I'm not spending a lot of time in the morning. Let's see. I, for a while, I took up yoga and sort of got out of practice with the COVID, not going into, actually, I like the experience of doing it in the class of other people, but meditation, I used to think was kind of impossible for me, but when you break it down into just little 3, 5, or 10 minute meditations, and give yourself the goal of, you know, doing it 2 or 3 times a week, it's easier to do and still seems beneficial. Mm-hmm. Let's see. A therapist that I saw once talked about making deposits in a relationship bank, so that you know, the idea is that every time you do something good for your relationship, you're sort of making a deposit in the bank. And so when things are really challenging, you've got that built up in the bank. And so you can sort of draw off of that to keep your relationship strong. And so I don't always, you know, do a great job, but I try to, like every morning I write a little sticky note for my partner and just say something, you know, funny, or, you know, just say, I love you or thinking of you. Or sometimes it's a text message, getting flowers or sending a funny photo when I'm out on a run, you know, just being encouraging, kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of other things I could talk about, but I'll just say a few more. Mm-hmm. Working on challenging habits, so trying to avoid things that mm-hmm. have been bad habits or things, I shouldn't say bad, but things that I don't find as beneficial or things that I don't find they're enriching for me. So one of those is actually around alcohol. So I don't drink any longer. For me, it was really just kind of a health move. It became a unproductive habit for me, really most prominent, I think, in residency. I did my residency in New York, and alcohol is part of the culture there. You don't have to drive, and you know, it's just really easy accessible. And I found it was an easy way for me to turn off my mind. You know, when you spend these really long 24-hour shifts or, you know, 14-hour days or whatever, and just go, 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 go. And it was just an easy way to sort of to turn off my mind quickly. Right. And so it just sort of became a bad habit. And it was a really hard habit to change for me, but one that I thought was really beneficial for my overall health. But for some people, you know, it's around food is another one of my things that I'm still working on, but, you know, other people might be television or social media, things like that. And then challenge myself to little new habits. So every morning when I get up, I do cold plunge therapy, which for me is getting into a freezing cold shower for a few minutes, a great way to wake up. And I think it is an easier way to get started than a cup of coffee. I stopped chewing gum last year. This year, I started eating with chopsticks.
Eating everything with chopsticks?
Not everything. I still have to, like, you know, if I have a chicken breast or something, I still have to cut it up. But yeah. Like salad, I eat, you know, completely with chopsticks. I'm using mm-hmm. my left hand to just sort of challenge my brain. I've taken up tennis lessons as a new thing. I find that I really appreciate the structure, but I really like the challenging my brain with new habits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things outside of work. But anyway, that's a lot of things that are, you know, but I'm sort of constantly trying to do little things that make a difference in my life.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you think our audience should know?
Well, you know, I just would say that if you feel like you're going down that path, just to get help, you know, there is help available out there. Everybody finds their help in different ways, but You know, if you can't take care of yourself, you know, how are you going to be able to take care of other people? You know, and that's what
Right.
really our calling is. And you really do have to take care of yourself if you're going to spend your career trying to help others in medicine.